Hello, everyone. Good evening. In the various activities I've been involved in the past week or two, the subject regularly comes up, as it has here, of the war in Ukraine. And what is striking, or not really, I guess, striking, but not surprising, is the general outpouring of, it's as if everyone's hearts have opened. That this, you know, this terrible violence touches us. And the reaction has been opening. Of course, there's a lot of violence, of anger, a lot of fear, not understanding, of accusations. I'm talking about people in the groups that I work with. At the same time, there's this real heartfelt sharing of suffering and this outpouring of often powerlessness, but also wanting to help, wanting to do something, wanting to be better informed, wanting to follow the news, hear what people there are saying, participating in protests, donating money. Someone in Germany was telling me that there are people in Germany who are getting in their cars and driving to the Polish border with Ukraine just to be there to help and do whatever they can, with no real specific idea of what they will do, but driving there to help. Refugees arriving in various places, people reporting on how Russians are reacting, ordinary people. So we're interested in that too. Our hearts are open to the Russian people as well. And this is, you know, as we saw with COVID, this is another opportunity for us to see the interconnection, that we all are one. The Buddha's teachings tell us there is no other. There is no other. The Russian soldier is not other. Vladimir Putin is not other. We often think of these teachings as, okay, we're not separate, so that means that the Buddha's awakening, you know, he said, I see that all beings throughout space and time simultaneously awaken with me, because they all share the same virtue and wisdom. So we often think of this oneness aspect as we share the wisdom and the virtue. However, what we also need to see is that we share the suffering. We share the delusion. So in a situation like this, we can have our hearts open and have this outpouring of love and wanting to help and end the suffering. We can also use this opportunity to say, well, what is my part in feeding hatred and violence? Not necessarily that hatred and violence in the Ukraine, but the hatred and the violence in my community, in myself. How do I do that? And the teach is, you know, the teaching is, and what I say over and over again, it's that it's the separation that creates the violence and the hatred. And it's the awakening to non-separation that opens us to love, peace, the ultimate peace of non-separation. In Dogen's instructions to the cook, he gives very basic instructions like things that need to be low, put them low. Things that need to be high, put them high. Things that are big, put them in a space that's for things that are big. Things that are smaller, put them in a space that's for things that are smaller. These are instructions of how to work in the kitchen, right? But they're also very deep teachings about life. And in order to know, I mean, you know, he says, put things in their rightful or their appropriate place so that their value can be appreciated. In order to see what the appropriate place is, we have to see things as they are without judging. So in order to see things as they are, this is why we do our practice, right? Our meditation practice. Because our practice makes it easier for us. The more we become steeped in the practice of sitting, the more it becomes easier to know what to focus on, what to let go of, what to stay with, where to linger, what to indulge in, what not to indulge in, what to turn away from, what to turn towards, what to enhance, what to diminish. This is like putting things in their appropriate place. And our practice aims at that, to help us to do that, to see that within ourselves and then around us. And our practice helps us to open to discovery. Discoveries about ourselves. So we, you know, if we have our hand clinging to something about ourselves, I am an angry person, or I am a very intelligent person, or I'm not self-confident, something like that. I'm shy. So if we cling to those things, then we're really limiting ourselves and our action in the world, how we move in the world. If we can open our hand and just discover who we truly are and bear witness to what is truly here. You know, we see this with children when we teach them to ride a bicycle or to swim or, I don't know, something they don't know how to do or they think they don't know how to do. And when we teach them, suddenly it's like this great opening. They let go of the edge of the swimming pool and they're okay. The parent is not holding on to the back of the bicycle and child rides off. These are little moments of awakening, of letting go. That's what part of growing up is. You let go of your idea about yourself, and then you become larger. And if we can extend that to our ideas about ourself, but also our community, our city, our country, our language, our nationality, our gender, all of those things, if we can not hang on to that, those things, because I call them things because they are their concepts, well, then we don't end up with situations like what's happening in Ukraine. We can see people, things, places, how they are, and appreciate their value, and not try to make them be something else, or accumulate for ourselves, whatever it is. I'm certainly not steeped in Ukrainian-Russian history. However, I think it's pretty clear to most of us in the West that the Ukrainian people have the right to determine their own government and their own situation peacefully. And that part of respecting, seeing things as they are and respecting positions and places is not trying to impose our will on them, and certainly not violently. Of course, anytime you try to impose your will, it's a violence. So, and yet, can we look at that and say, okay, when do I do that? When do I try to impose my will on a situation, on other people? I impose my will on my kids. I want them to be a certain way, or on my partner, or on my animals, or in my community. I had a meeting just today before this. Fortunately, I had like 45 minutes before, so I could kind of chill, but as some of you know, I'm involved and I teach a course to Buddhist leaders, which is about learning what are healthy boundaries. Learning how, if we don't respect positions, particularly if teachers or Buddhist leaders don't respect their position as and recognize that they have power, and the point of their position is the well-being of the students, they abuse that power, countless tragedies arise. So I teach this course to help Buddhist leaders study this, right? To look at this, look into this. And so tonight, the meeting was about 2 months ago. They asked us, the people who organize it, asked us to answer a few questions because they're rewriting the handbook for this course. And the handbook, it's mainly Christian because this course is designed not only for Buddhist leaders, but for Christian, Muslim, any sort of spiritual leaders, Jewish. I'm only involved in the Buddhist section. But the handbook is really Christian because it was originally a Christian course. And they wanted us to contribute, answer some of the questions from a Buddhist perspective. We had a deadline. I did it. You know, the deadline was like 2 weeks. This was 2 months ago. I did it. They presented it as just some notes. It doesn't have to be anything elaborate. So I did it. So we had this meeting tonight to talk about it. And it turns out only one other person did it. The other teachers in the course with me didn't do it. And so the organizers shared part of what I had answered to a question, but it was only a tiny bit, and then part of what someone else had answered to a question, and then opened the discussion and people started discussing. And they started, you know, I was really annoyed by the fact, one, that nobody else did it. And then my time was being occupied by talking about it, and they were all reflecting on what they were supposed to have written 2 months ago. And I was really annoyed. And I saw that I was really annoyed. And so I just tried to sit there. I didn't get involved. It was on Zoom, you know. I didn't have to really speak. There was no reason for me to speak. I just tried to stay with it. But then at one point, when they started bringing up some points that we could add and whatever, and someone brought up a point that I had, in fact, put in one of my answers. And I said, yeah, I put that in my answer. And then later someone else brought up another point that we could say. And I said, yeah, I put that in one of my answers. And then someone said, oh, well, I'll write an essay about this. And she was saying all this essay she was going to write. And then, so I said to the organizer, so wait, are you asking us to write new essays? Or are you asking us to just everyone respond to these questions? And she said, well, actually, I'm just asking everyone to respond to the questions. And here was this woman who didn't respond to the questions, who was going to write this big essay and whatever. And I was really annoyed. But I just tried not to engage in it with aggression. And further fueling my annoyance. I just tried to say, okay, fine. What I wrote is not perfect. And then I said, then the organizer said, so Amy, can I share your answers with the others? And I said, yes, by all means, but I want them to understand that I answered your query 2 months ago within the deadline, which was like 10 days. And so I just quickly sat down at the computer and typed up some answers. I didn't, you know, reflect and write an essay on it or anything. And the woman who was going to write the essay, she said, oh yeah, I read what you wrote. And I was like amazed that you could just sit down and do that. I don't know how you could do that. Especially the questions were so Christian. I don't know how you managed to give Buddhist responses to them. Because, you know, it was things like the commandments, you know, that forbid stealing, and abuse of students is violating the commandment to steal. Or it was really Christian stuff. So I just said, well, I just think outside the box, you know, I just sat down and tried to open my mind and think outside the box. Anyway, I give this as an example of watching what happens to me, what happens inside me, and see the roots of them, where it could go. I could have become very angry. I could have, you know, complained to them and said, well, why didn't any of you do it? Because all that they were saying, sharing in the discussion was good. Absolutely good answers to the questions. I don't know why they didn't just do that 2 months ago when they asked us to do it in the first place, but I suppose because everyone's busy, they have lots of stuff to do. They didn't really understand. The questions were so Christian. They thought, oh, I don't want to go there. Whatever. So fortunately, but I mean, you can still sense my annoyance right now when I'm telling the story, right? Because I was annoyed. But I did not let it color my, I stayed, I didn't argue. I didn't feed the aggression. I didn't fuel my annoyance with aggression. I happily said, yes, you can use my, share my examples. And I didn't become complacent and deny what I was feeling and just say, oh, it doesn't matter. But I didn't become restless and engage in it either. And this is important. So as I said, our practice helps us to see what to focus on, what to let go of, what to stay with, what to indulge in, when to indulge, when not to indulge. It helped me to let go of the annoyance, first be aware of it, and then let go of it, and then just bear witness to what was happening. Now, with something like this in a group of like-minded people, we're all doing it for the good cause. It's different than, a geopolitical war. It's true. The roots are the same. I think we talked about this last week we did a circle last week around because the invasion had just happened. So last Thursday we had a circle. And then I think we came back to it a bit in the study group. Does anyone remember? Or maybe just I did in the study group. I don't know. It's important to see what, to acknowledge what we're feeling, what you're feeling. And I've tried to in my groups, in a writing workshop, in the study group, in the last week, I've tried to give space so that people can say what they're feeling about this, this Ukraine conflict, because it's affecting us all. And not so much, the Russians are so wrong. It's not, Ukraine was never Russian. The Ukrainians aren't Nazis. It's more so, what are you feeling? What are you feeling? That's where we can start. And that's where we can also share. We see that we are all one in that, because we hear what other people are feeling and we feel the same thing to differing degrees. Maybe we use different words. And when we realize that, that's awakening. Awakening is relational. It can't be any other way. That was what the Buddha's message was. It's relational. And it's like Suzuki Roshi said, there aren't awakened people, there's only awakened action. And that's relational. Action is relational. And so when we see that, then we share the joy and the sufferings of the world, then we can act accordingly. Seeing the oneness is wisdom, and then acting with compassion is the functioning of that wisdom. Whether it's to ourselves, so I had compassion for myself when I was annoyed, because I could see I was really feeling, I did it and they didn't. I took time out to do it. I'm better than them. And it wasn't really to that point, but that was the flavor of it, right? I'm so good, forever the good student who does what she's supposed to do. My responses were way better than theirs. How could they not see that what I wrote was obviously the best answer? This kind of stuff. And I had compassion for myself feeling that. And because of all the practice I've done, I didn't linger with it. I could see through it. I could see where it was coming from. And I mean, also I was tired. I had a busy day. I knew I had Zazen and I was going to give a talk. And I was like, you know, they could have spared me this meeting. I didn't have to be here. I did the thing, you know? But of course, ever the good student, I would not miss the meeting, right? I'm always there on time. That too annoyed me. So I've passed, you know, like a lot of time being annoyed with myself, with the others and with myself. Probably, because I was annoyed with myself, I was annoyed with the others. But, but it was a good practice opportunity. And I opened my hand to let go. And that helped me then not grasp something new. Let me just receive, just be there. And I'm trying to do that with this Ukraine thing too. Although I am amazed, once again, I think it's just so amazing to see the outpouring of heart that manifests in so many different ways, you know, whether it's economic sanctions or general condemnation or so many different ways, whether it's leaders at the top down to everyday people. So, I don't know how much I mean, in this opening of the heart, I don't know how much we're looking at how we feed hatred and violence. You know, I think there's a lot of how good we are, but and how much we feel for the suffering of the others, and how much it angers us, the aggression and the destruction and the violence. And we share that. It's kind of a common thing, but I'm not sure how generally we're looking at what our part is in the violence, not necessarily that violence, but actually all violence is one as well. So as the Dalai Lama said, disarmament, global disarmament has to begin with individual disarmament in your heart. So that's where we are tonight. And so once again, I would like to open it up and give everyone a chance to say whatever you would like to say. If you have any questions about what I've said, or if you want to share how you're feeling, or comment, Freddie.
Good. Hello, everyone. What you said, Amy, just remind me of Japanese monk when he became a master. He said, don't beat the sleeping monk, don't beat him, because he is manifesting his true nature. Because you know that in the ancient times, when monks were sleeping, they were so he said, don't beat the sleeping monk. And it was like a koan. Don't beat the sleeping monk. I don't know if it's related to what you say about them. I don't know, it just came to me. Don't beat the sleeping monk.
Well, so for you, what would be in this situation, do you see that as like being compassionate, or
yes, because we can say that Putin is a sleeping monk, or people who they are not awakened to what it is. So we don't have to latch on them. We don't have to beat the sleeping monk, because we are like when you see the other they didn't do their job, so beat the sleeping monk because they were sleeping, so wake up. No, don't beat their manifesting our true nature in a way. Don't beat the sleeping monk.
Yeah. Because it's true, you know, Vladimir Putin as well has Buddha nature and has the potential to awaken to that. Just like the rest of us. José Eduardo.
Yeah, but hello everyone. What you just said is, I think, is the core of the matter. I mean, this connection between our inner violence or sleepy state of mind and what is going in Ukraine. This is what I feel. And actually, when I'm involved in some kind of fight, especially with near people that are near to me, I feel it like that. I feel that I'm in a kind of a civil war or something that is not disconnected from what it is going on. Okay, now we are concentrated in Ukraine, but so many other wars are going on and have been going on, and are always going on. It seems it's part of our nature, of our animal, non-Buddha nature, to be involved in fights, in struggles. And this practice, yes, it helps us a lot, or at least it gives us some guidelines to prevent the inner violence to explode so easily. That's what I wanted to say. And that also, something that is also very obviously is that many of these indulging in fights and struggles, they very much conditioned by our predisposition to act according to ideas that we have. I mean, my experience, for instance, with people that I have difficulties, is that it's very hard for me to not have a pre-view of them, a pre-concept of them. And what sometimes I have learned is that it's always very useful if you have very strong preconceptions about people that are fed by your ideas or by your emotions. Yeah, it's really to cultivate this openness of mind and try to be present and not to indulge immediately in some kind of discussion that is triggered by your ideas or by the irritation you get just by the voice of that person, because that is really the source of our wars. That we are easily triggered by preconceptions, by ideas, by feelings. And it's true. I mean, we cannot disconnect ourselves what is going on in Ukraine. That's obviously. I completely understood what you just said. And it's good that you gave your own example, because I think you were watching your own reactions and connecting to what happened with you this afternoon. And what was going on in Ukraine. Of course, in Ukraine is a serious problem, but of course, what you said is a great, great teaching. Well, is something that anyone that is practicing or not even practicing should be aware. What is our responsibility in a way for what is going on in Ukraine? And it's very difficult to disarm ourselves, as we know. It's very difficult. but it is part of the practice. That's the beauty of the practice. But my question, in fact, is this, and I've been thinking about this. I mean, I have four kids. And if they will be living in Ukraine, I think all of them, well, I have a girl, so she would not be involved. But I've read that people in Ukraine, they are supposed between 18 years old and 60 years old to get a gun and fight for their independence. So my deep question now, when, what would I do? What would I say to my kids if I was an Ukrainian person, citizen? What would I do in that circumstance? Would I tell them, okay, go and fight, sit in meditation? I don't know. You see, I don't know. The complication in Ukraine is so, I mean, in all wars, of course, here we see it from the very beginning that this is an act of aggression of the of Putin, of not the Russian people, of course, of his. And if you have followed more or less what is going on, it's so crazy because he elaborated a sort of a narrative. He has his own story about the Ukrainian and Russian people as if there was a single people, and he even gave a teaching about that, manipulating perhaps elements, I don't know. But this is a thing that is really in his mind, and not only in his mind, but there are many people, I'm sure, that follow this. And so you see how ideas can trigger and start, or I don't know if the war has been there for a long time already. I mean, it's been there for 10 years or so. Right? So this is just the culmination. And I'm very much sensitive to this. I'm feeling all these kind of complications, I don't know, in a very deep way. Because I am very much aware that this can really be the beginning of something that can be even worse. And maybe we don't know if the war will expand to Europe even. We can be in the brink of a very serious problem, and then perhaps we will be put in a situation that we really have to decide what to do with our own anger in a very deep way. So, yeah, perhaps it would be also interesting to read and to listen to Thich Nhat Hanh, because he has been involved in these kind of situations. We have not been involved so far. I mean, we can be talking about this and see things, but we have not been as he has been, or I guess there must be some pacifist Buddhist people or Christian people that in Ukraine must be also confronted with these problems that I'm just now speaking about them. But what would you do if you would be in the middle of this confusion, of this? Okay, that's what I wanted to share.
Thank you. I think what I, in response to, you know, okay, we're not in that situation, and we, what would we do if we were? It's true, we're not. None of us are living in a city that is on the brink of annihilation or serious conflict in the streets with our children taking up arms. At the same time, we are that as well. And that's why it's so important to recognize that we don't have to wait for that situation to, it's now. What do we do now here in our situation where we are in ourselves? That's what's important.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah.
We don't need to be in that terrible, terrible situation that so many Ukrainian people are in. What should we stay? Should we go? Where do we go? You know, I've been reading a lot about what artists are saying, and you know, theater directors and what do they do? What are they going to do? Should they flee? Should they stay? Are they better? Is it more useful if they stay? Writers, whatever. We have that same situation now for us in our own lives, in our own beings. We have conflicts in ourselves. Like some woman said at Auschwitz, I've woken up to the fact that I have done Auschwitz within myself all my life by creating parts I didn't like and exterminating them or trying to, and then setting up concentration camps for my children, for my husband, parts that I didn't like and trying to get rid of them. So we don't have to wait. It's the moment is now. Christine, I think you had your hand up. No? Yeah.
Yeah, thank you. Hello, everyone. Yeah, that's certainly the more difficult part to see where's the hatred in us, or yeah, it's more easy to have compassion for what happens to Ukrainian people. And I once read, I think it was after the attacks in Paris, the terrorist attacks, from Olivier Clerc, a French writer and kind of philosopher or spiritual leader, that there is this idea that there exists something like a universal consciousness, or I have the image of like a cloud, and that all the thoughts of hatred or whatever, or anger that we indulge in and that we cultivate, that they all go or feed this cloud. And when there is enough negativity accumulated from all people, of all humanity, then it manifests like something like these attacks or such a war. And yeah, I kind of can relate to that idea, that even if we're not there, and it's quite, yeah, it's not the next Germany, it's already a little bit closer, but we're not that close to it. Even though it's in Europe, it's really close. We can look at our own lives and see where we feed this kind of, where it comes from. And that's, yeah, it's certainly easier to blame Putin or get some distance to when it manifests like that, instead of looking within ourselves. So yeah, just wanted to share that.
Yeah, thank you. So,
It looks like our kitchen is in big disorder. Everything is need to be arranged, and I'm here. I see the news. I see. I do also something. I were in a demonstration with João last Sunday. But it's not a question that this humanitarian wave, it's we need this. It's very important. It's it's very important, but it's a big disorder. I ask why we don't feel this solidarity also when the Africans come with the boats. I feel it's a big difference. It's a reaction where it's enormous. It's very beautiful. Everyone makes something, but then in other situations, we let the people die there with kids, with and we are shocked also, but it's not this reaction, this world reaction. There are people are condemned and in tribunal because they help these people. We have something very interesting because it's a big contrast. There was a Ukrainian man killed by Portuguese policemen. For 2 years ago, killed in the border, the border police killed him. It's Ukrainian, and this they closed. They say that what's not it was not murder. It was everything. It was not clear, and today they are open to receive the family of this man, the woman, and two kids. And it's the same thing. For me, it's why it's a big disorder, like this teaching how to organize our kitchen. It's a big disorder. And in this demonstration where you are together, me and João, and it was very, and it was good, but in a moment, I become also a little bit strange because so many words that was not my words, they become very violent also, and we and João go out of this demonstration. But it's clear, the people, the human beings, they need help, they need to, it's clear, but why this big reaction?
Yes, this is part of the reality, is that some refugees are okay and others aren't. And war in some places, we don't pay any attention to. And war in other places, we do. This is, of course, is a huge generalization, but I hear what you say. And I think it's further, in my experience, if I look at myself, it's further evidence of the separations that we make, that we open our hearts more easily to something that is closer to who we think we are. To, you know, Europeans are reacting so strongly because it's in Europe. You know, in California, I don't think they're, I mean, of course they're reacting, but not in the same way. I think it was Lisa last week who said that her cousin in California called her and said, oh, you know, we're really thinking about you. We really have you in our heart. Because for her, it was a European thing for this woman in California. You know, in Latin America, there's conflicts going on in Africa. And we don't pay that much attention to it. It's true because we have a tendency to look at what we think of as us more closely. So what our practice is about is expanding that notion of us. And because, you know, I've heard this too, you know, I've heard other people saying, oh, you know, America is like being so righteous about this, but they accept the Israeli occupation of Gaza. They've refused to, you know, I forget what it was, refused to give Ukraine arms, or I don't know, you know, accusing America of doing all sorts of horrible things, which they do, right? It's not, it's true what they're saying about America. At the same time, that doesn't discount what's happening now, you know? Yes, should we expand? Can we expand our hearts to include everyone everywhere? That's a big order. So let's start where we are. And for Europeans at this moment, this is where we are. And it's true, you know, it makes no sense to put people in front of a court because they're helping refugees from Cameroon or Afghanistan or, you know, Nigeria, but not to let all the refugees come in from the Ukraine. Although the far right in France is kind of not so keen on the Ukrainian exiles either. So, because they're other. Their version of other is even more extreme than what we're talking about. So it's true, you know, we can say, okay, we can do better, but so let's do the best we can right now. And maybe our hearts will change because of it. And we will see the refugees coming in boats in the Mediterranean differently.
Yes, I try to let the last days to imagine the Putin as a baby.
Yeah.
He was also a baby.
True. Absolutely. Yeah.
And they have the Ukrainian people make a monument here in Lisbon to a poet. His name is Taras. I don't know the other name. It's very interesting to read the history. It was a poet and painter and writer and he has a very interesting story. It's interesting to read. He comes from a slave, he was a slave by czars, and he make a, it's very interesting. Someone, one intellectual in this time make a mark to sell things, to have money to buy these taras from the czars and to give him school, to give him freedom to learn and write, and it's very strong, this the story of this taras. Sorry, I don't know the other name. And this a national personality for the Ukrainian people. I was very interested in reading his life.
Our time is up. Thank you all for sharing what you've shared. And keep practicing. It's our only hope. It's our best hope. Thank you.